This is Gordon Peters, as by a word, what a surprise. Out of the past, this comes, doesn't it? Wow, years and years ago. I was in two episodes. One, I've had to find out about this because otherwise I'd forgotten. The series three, episode four, which was Cold Store. I gather that was about the having the trousers fitted. And the second one, series four, episode one, No Sale, which I hate to say this, but I could completely forgotten all about it as to what happened, as to what we said, what we did. It's terrible, really. I feel so ashamed of myself, you know, forgetting about that. But that's old age, I'm afraid, and other things to think about, of course. So, yes, it was a delightful experience. And, of course, working with dear friends, you know, from where we all sort of started and came. Although Molly and John and Frank were not way ahead, but 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 years ahead of me, really. But I didn't work with all of them since. And you know, they're delightful to work with. Well, I suppose David knew me from Dad's Army. And for, you know, I was pretty well known at the BBC Centre. And in those days, directors and producers used the same actors if they could. The same actor, each director really had his own little repertory company, and he would always fall back on the regulars that he knew, you know, because A, he'd worked with them, he knew they were no trouble, he knew they learned their lines, and there were no bother, you know. He could sort of be, you know, friends easily with them. They were easy to direct. And I suppose that's how that happened, really. So everything I've done for David Croft, strangely enough, has always been in the studio. You know, I did several Dad's Army, all in the studio. Grace and Favour, You Rang My Lord, and several others. But all everything I did was in the studio. I never had the pleasure of going out and filming and staying and meeting with the cast, you know, for dinner at the end of the day's filming, and getting to know each other really well. Oh yeah, yes. Well, as I say, you know, everything. The trousers one. When you first mentioned it to me, I was trying to recall it, and all I could remember about that was an umbrella. And as to what we did with the umbrella, I couldn't think one minute. And of course, having seen it replayed since, I said, oh, that's how we did it. I suppose we took a bit of time sorting that out, but it looks quite simple when it's done, you know, and as the pros do it, as John and Wendy was the judge. But it just wasn't easy getting the tape measure onto the end of the umbrella as it came up between my legs and things. So, yes, that was a bit of fun, but that's, I think that was the first one I did with I've Been Served, yes. And of course, it was lovely to meet up with Wendy. I'd met her several times before. And in fact, at the rehearsal of that, she and John asked me at lunchtime to join them for a drink. They always went round the pub, because our rehearsals for that were at the Acton rehearsal rooms, which was a BBC block. They had a block built, you know, about 7-8 stories high in Acton, and that was their rehearsal room. And each floor, there was the ground floor, which was the reception and the security guard. Even in those days, they had security guards, and then sort of different little offices. And then the next floor was a very, very large room, like a ballroom, which was where you held the first talk through. And then everybody retired and left the director and the star. And they chatted over things, and you were called in to do your little bit and went back to the green room. And I recall, I mustn't bring Frankie Howard into this, but that was a funny little bit, really. Yes, they asked me for a drink, which is to the pub just round the corner. They were well known there. And Wendy always had champagne. Oh, that's the only thing she drank. So as she sort of came in the door, the bottle was already being opened for her. And of course, you know, asked to join them. And I said, you know, champagne at lunchtime. So anyhow, I did, but I was very careful. But they could knock it back and have no effect whatsoever. But I couldn't do that. You know, I just physically couldn't not do it. Second day, I had to call a halt to it. I said, I'm sorry. Well, I'll have a lime and lemonade, if you don't mind. But you see, you either drink or you can't. And I just can't drink at lunchtime. So I sort of had to bow out of that. But that was Wendy and John's watering place. How they did it and then just worked, you know, because they all had decent parts of it. Word-wise, to learn. So it was a bit difficult, but it sorted out. As regards the other one, the trousers, as I say, dear, it was only through seeing the names on a rerun that my daughter found a copy of Cold Store and sent it to me. And I was, good Lord, yes, I remember that. Other than that, I just, no idea. I didn't know my wife's name in it, a real name. I think it was Joan Cunningham, something like that. Anyhow, if you're still alive, dear, because it's many years ago, I do apologize. Well, I knew them all, really. You know, it was like a well-oiled machine by then. What was it, episode? Series 3, when I did my first one. And you just slotted in very, very naturally. There was no airs and graces there. They were just pros doing a good job. I mean, obviously, the sort of the John Inman and Molly and Frank and Wendy, you know, they were all sort of regulars, but out of the second role, should we say, second run, what was his name, little fella, Mr. Granger. About that, isn't it funny how these things, that happens, you see, Andy, when you get old, you drift away, and then pow, it suddenly comes, Mr. Granger. I loved his little character. And of course, old Mr. Grace, you know, everybody loved him. Well, with Jeremy, I mean, he used to sort of waft in and out and hardly ever spoke, you know, he mainly chatted with David. But with Dad's Army, with Jimmy, you know, he was there for every line. He was so meticulous and so wanted it to be bang on as it's actually written. Entirely different attitudes to a writer, to his work. Yes, of David's. Yes, he used me an awful lot. It was very, very nice. There was one, it was about a brass band. Do you remember it? What was the name of that? Would you remember that? I can't remember. Anyhow, I was booked as a reporter, news reporter, and the band were going to achieve a record of playing at sort of 500 feet in balloons. You see, and I was booked to go down to this field in Oxford, somewhere near Oxford. And it was a Sunday, and it was wind was howling, and the wind was gusting. You know, it was not possible for shooting. Anyhow, all the balloons, there were about 8, 9 of them, all tethered down, and we were all standing around, you know, thinking this is never going to change. It's going to be like this. And suddenly, one of the balloons took off. A little bit of wind got under the actual balloon and tore it away from its moorings. It didn't actually take off, but it bounced along the field. And we all sat in a line just watching this thing go. And then it caught up in the tree. And I thought, God, thank goodness, no one was in that. And we all dashed over. And just as we got there, the band of the basket had landed right way up. And just as we got there, the fingers appeared on the, and a little head appeared out of the basket. He said, what's happened? What's happened? Evidently, he got in the balloon for a kip, you know, to wait, and it had torn away, and the poor fellow was bang, bang. He was shaken, but not stirred. So that was a sort of a funny, in a way, a funny, sordid episode, really. Many years, lots of things happened, but not good enough to going on. It'll be all right on the night. Oh, incidentally, I got my first helicopter ride there. I think it was an autogyro or something. I don't know what the difference is, really. But it was a farmer who would sort of, obviously it was his field, and he had this little helicopter. And I got chatting to him, and he said, would you like a ride? Well, that was on the second. We went back the following Sunday and did it. It was a lovely day. So that was my very first experience. What a thrill that was. Oh, there again, sudden recall. The one I was talking about, the balloon, just, oh, happy band. Tom Menard was in that. I can't remember anybody else, but Tom was an old pal of mine. Lovely, lovely Yorkshireman, lovely comic. Oh, happy band, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. When you think back, and of course, I did a lovely part in Grace and Favour, Mr. Volpoli, I think the character was, and the story was they were looking for somebody for the hotel they'd taken over. Grace and Favour, that way. I don't know who it was announced me, but they told him that Mr. Volpone was very busy and he worked as a waiter in a restaurant on the trains, but very experienced. So here is Mr. Volpone. I came on running with the tray, you know, and sort of not moving all the time, weaving in and out and sort of leaning forward. And just as they went to get them, I go back with the train and all that. So just swept through them like an avalanche. And then afterwards, I said to David, which is very, very rare because, you know, he was very much in control. I said, wouldn't it be an idea that just as I've gone off, there's a terrible crash of cutlery and you know, I dropped the tray. He said, oh, yes. And he put that in. So I was very pleased, very pleased. And it's one of the occasions when I got a tremendous round of applause from the audience. Sorry. So that's a happy one. But it was a good experience. All the shows were excellent, really. What else was there? Was another one. Oh, Heidi High was, yes, I did a couple of things as a gatekeeper. I went to film that. I went to film that. I forgot about that. That was sort of 2 days filming as a gatekeeper. I can't remember much about that. But yes, David was responsible for a lot of work and responsible for making lots of people who were, you know, good pros, but made them big names entirely through his programs, his shows. Oh, Are You Free? Of course, Are You Free? Yes, that was a regular, wasn't it? Was there any other? I can't quite recall. John was the favourite with them in America, and he used to go over every year, you know, and fated absolutely, you know, F-E-T, not F-A-T, fated. By them all, they adored him, and of course the others went from time to time. It was always John. He was the main one, you know, for that. So, but I suppose also it would be on public broadcasting, as it's called, over there. So it's a certain sort of type of viewers that if they took to you, they showed it, you know. They were very, very popular indeed. I'd just like to say that David, at one time, towards the end of his reign, I suppose, and he said probably one of the nicest things a comic could receive. And he said, "Gordon, I always book you because whatever I give you, you guarantee me a laugh." So he said, "You can make a laugh out of anything." So that was very, very nice. I was very pleased because he didn't talk a lot. What he said, it was had to be said and it done, and that was it. You know, he had great authority in the rehearsal room. Nobody would sort of, you know, mess about too much or play around. I mean, what they did on filming, you know, outside broadcasting, filming, I don't know, but certainly in the rehearsal rooms and in the studio, he didn't have to be strict. He just had that sort of quiet air of authority, which you accepted, you know, because he was the booker as well as the writer. But a very, very nice man indeed. And oddly enough, I did earlier on, before I met David, I did a tour of a musical with his brother Peter Croft, many, many, many years ago, early on in my time. You know, I started in 1952, so I've been at it a long time, and made a very fair living out of it. And what is more, an enjoyable one. I really have, you know. People say, you know, you don't look 94. I said, oh, yeah. He said, how? Why? I said, probably because I've been doing the job I love. And if you love your job and you enjoy going to work and doing it instead of some mundane 9-to-5 and thinking, oh, what time am I getting off? If you can do that, then you can be a very happy man. And that helps your life, I'm sure. I did a lot of Dick Emery shows. And once he'd gone, you know, no matter how the director screamed, get on with it, time's wasting. If Dick had gone in, it took some time to come round. But possibly working out how the umbrella gag was going to work. I was apprehensive the whole time because I didn't really know where John was going to end up with that bloody umbrella. It's been nice recalling old times. I do apologize to all the people in I've been served that's still alive, you know. But golly, I'd completely forgotten that scene with Joan. Was it Joan Cunningham? You know, about not buying the dress. And I was thinking about it, actually, last night. It said the dress was £99. Well, this would be about in the 1970s, wouldn't it? So £99 for a lady's dress was, wow. Well, bring it on for a grand, I suppose. Must have been. Must have been. So, looking at it, it wasn't worth that. But anyhow, I mean, I didn't think for one minute. I couldn't recall having a row, which happened in the scene. I couldn't recall any of that at all.